Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is directly enacted from the spiritual platform, surpassing all lower grades of consciousness, namely sensual, mental, and intellectual. There is no need of understanding the language of the mantra, nor is there any need of mental speculation, nor any intellectual adjustments for chanting this Maha Mantra. It springs automatically from the spiritual platform, and as such, anyone can take part in this chanting of this transcendental sound vibration without any previous qualification and dance in ecstasy. We have seen it practically. Even a child can take part in the chanting, or even a dog can take part. The chanting should be heard, however, from the lips of a pure devotee of the Lord, so that the immediate effect can be achieved. As far as possible, chanting from the lips of non-devotees should be avoided, inasmuch as milk touched by the lips of a serpent has poisonous effect. The word Hara is a form of addressing the energy of the Lord. Both Krishna and Rama are forms of directly addressing the Lord, and they mean the highest pleasure. Hara is the supreme pleasure potency of the Lord. This potency, addressed as Hare, helps us in reaching the Supreme Lord. The material energy known as Maya is one of the multi-potencies of the Lord, and the living entities are described as an energy that is superior to matter. I'll read that again. The material energy known as Maya is also one of the multipotencies of the Lord, and the living entities are described as an energy that is superior to matter. When the superior energy is in contact with the inferior energy, it becomes an incompatible situation. But when the marginal energy is in contact with the supreme spiritual potency, Hara, it becomes the natural, happy, normal condition of the living entity. The three words, namely Hare, Krishna, and Rama, are the transcendental seeds of the Maha Mantra. And the chanting is the spiritual call for the Lord and his internal energy, Hara, for giving protection to the living entities. This chanting is just like the genuine crying of a child for his mother. Mother Hara helps in achieving the grace of the Supreme Father Hari, or Krishna, and the Lord, reveals himself to such sincere devotees. Therefore, no other means of spiritual realization is as effective in this age as chanting the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is what Srila Prabhupada said in 1966. And here we are today. Is everyone having that full experience that Srila Prabhupada is speaking of? Here's another question. Is everyone having a partial experience of that full experience that Srila Prabhupada is speaking of? Yes. I think we all have to admit that we're not having the full experience, because perhaps if we were, we would have fainted. And we can all admit also that we are having some experience, and that is why we're here for this weekend, and that is why we have molded our lives around trying to chant without offenses. Trying to chant without offenses means trying to chant removing the negatives. Right? If I'm a businessman and I have a business and it's running at a big, big loss, and I'm getting so many debts coming in, one after another, then I'm going to try to get rid of my debts. But that's still not good enough. I also have to achieve some profit, because I have to actually live, I have to survive, and I have to perhaps live, I would like to live very comfortably and happily. So then I require profit. So first we need to get rid of the debt. Now, I found a quote, actually. I must admit that this particular series of seminars for this retreat was a little difficult for me, because when I was asked to speak on kirtan, I told my Prabhu many times, it's too broad. What am I going to say on kirtan? You know, I of course, I can go on folio and look up all the quotes in kirtan. But then I will become like an encyclopedia, and I could just quote you and quote you many things that Prabhupada has said or people have said about kirtan. But it may not really move anyone very much, because we intellectually know these things. We have heard these things before. Some of us maybe not, but most of us have heard about kirtan. And it's something we do every day if we come to the temple. And if we don't, we should have some kirtan, because kirtan is actually essential. It's essential for us. But whether we have kirtan in our daily practice or whether we don't have kirtan in our daily practice, it's something we always need to know more about, but it's actually not knowing that we need. It's kirtan that we need. So I was a little bit... my mind wasn't willing to accept the task of speaking about kirtan in this general way. But then I found a very nice quote from Srila Prabhupada that really helped me a lot. But it was short, and it wasn't 2 days worth of classes. It's only a little quote. But inside that quote there's so much. And Prabhuji suggested read the message from the Happening album, because this was Srila Prabhupada's, what he wanted to say. He'd come by that boat ride, difficult ride, heart attacks, everything. And this is what he wanted to tell to the rest of the world. So read that, and of course that was wonderful to read. But still, as I said, I was struggling a little bit to stay on the theme. But let me share with you now the little excerpt that Srila Prabhupada spoke that really helped me, because here we are reading about this message from the Happening album, and it's this transcendental plane, and it's just taking place, and anyone can take part in the chanting, springing directly from the transcendental plane, and here I am, possibly a little sleepy one day, and the next day this, and the next day that. So, what's the difficulty? So Srila Prabhupada also spoke about the necessity the necessity. What does necessity mean?
Essential.
Absolutely required.
Essential means absolutely required. You can't avoid it. You can't say, well, this part I'm not so fond of, so I won't do this, and I'll do this. But he spoke of the necessity of purification for spiritual advancement. Now this statement, the necessity of purification for spiritual advancement, means something very personal for each one of us. And sometimes we know what it means, we know where our impurities lie, and sometimes we're not so conscious because of one reason or another. Perhaps we have not been chanting for a very long time, and we don't really have a clear understanding of what is impure and what is pure. Or perhaps we shift, we go here in the morning and then there during the day, and we come back here at night sometimes. When we go over here, we get absorbed in matter and our relationship with the material world. And we don't even stop at that time to think, am I thinking about Krishna right now? Because we assume that this is what I do now and that's what I do then. So I'm doing this now. So don't bring this in, I do that then. And some people, as I was criticizing yesterday, this is they have a discipline in sadhana bhakti. They're very disciplined, they have structure in sadhana bhakti, but it doesn't flow through to the rest of their day. It's very common. So if you perceive that difficulty yourself, then you can join the rest of us. So purification for spiritual advancement. It is not enough merely to chant holy words. Now this seems like a... Yes, no, the word I was thinking of, it seems like a contradiction. Because we just heard that it was enough, even if you don't know the language of the mantra, even a dog can take part. So, and here Srila Prabhupada is saying, it is not enough simply to chant holy words. Prabhupada said, one must become pure inside and out. Chanting in purity brings spiritual advancement. The living entity becomes impure. How are we impure? So we all have our own brand of impurity. The living entity becomes impure because he wants to enjoy material pleasure. So there it is. Very simple. He wants to enjoy material pleasure, and we each have our own type of material pleasure that we would like to enjoy, centered around the body, the mind, the senses, and the objects. And each of us have the same diagnostic problem, and yet the symptoms are unique to every individual. But the impure, so here we are all impure, but the impure can become pure by following Krishna, by doing all one's works for Krishna. Beginners in Krishna consciousness, now this particular sentence of Srila Prabhupada's really applies to most of us. So listen to it with that in mind. Beginners in Krishna consciousness have a tendency to relax their efforts in a short while. But to advance spiritually, you must resist this temptation and continually increase your efforts and devotion. So here is the doctor feeling the pulse and saying, generally speaking, this is a problem. People relax their efforts. They feel like, well, I've been a devotee now for 1 year, 10 years, how many years?
Too many years.
I've been a devotee for too many years and I've been chanting Hare Krishna and it springs from the spiritual plane and I must be okay by now. And so if I do a little less, it won't show, it won't hurt. I've already done quite a lot, and definitely I've done a lot compared to everybody else around me, outside, out there. They're not doing anything. And look what I've done. One time I talked to a young man. He was not born a devotee, but his parents became devotees when he was quite young. And he went through the Gurukula training and pious and lived in a holy place for many years and so many things that most people haven't done. And so I said to that young person, I said, I think you have to become a little more serious. And I think you have to really, when you're looking towards your future, you should be kind of feeling like Krishna will take care of me and accept Krishna's mercy in whatever form he gives it. And this young devotee with a lot of merit, he said, I think that with as much as I have done in this life already, I really deserve something. So he knew what he wanted, what he desired and deserved. And he got it. He got it. But what he desired and deserved had some material pleasures connected to it. So he was feeling that, just see, I did all of this and I got this. And this mentality is very dangerous. Because this mentality is not pure devotional service. And when we chant with this mentality, please give me this and this and this and this, we're not chanting in the mood of a pure devotee. We're calculatingly doing business with Krishna. I did this, so definitely that will go there, and that probably go there, and the two of those I could get there. Now, in a mentality like that, is there any relationship? No. No relationship. There's no relationship, means it goes like this. Yes? But we tend to think alone. Here's me, and I'll do this, and then that will go like this, and I'll do this. As if there's a glass wall there. And on the other side of the glass wall, we hear about, oh, Krishna this and Krishna that, and so on and so forth. But we cannot penetrate. And why? Because everything we want has to be some fruit, some gain for ourselves. And this is so difficult to give up. We may give it up on the gross level. We may start wearing devotional dress. We may start chanting Hare Krishna regularly. We may do so many things. Even as I said, we may do so much sadhana practice. But we may not address this core issue that's driving us, which is what I'm going to get from this. And if you do try and examine that, you try to think, I'm not going to do that anymore. I do see myself doing that. That's terrible. I'm not going to do that anymore. From now on, I'm going to try and offer my activities without expecting what's coming back to me. You'll find if you try to do that in your chanting or in your devotional activities, that there's something very inadequate in you that's causing you to do that. And what do you think that is? Put simply, there's so many things. I've got bad habits and I have material desires. I'm not talking about that. Those are the result of something. What do you think is the core problem? Yes, but even more before that, what is the problem? You don't believe in him. Why? What is the problem? I don't believe in him. I don't have love for him. Why?
Insecurity.
What else? Selfish. Yes, these are all symptoms of what happens. Because of what?
Offenses.
That comes also after. Envy. That comes after. What's the problem? Impersonalism. Yes, we're getting a little closer.
Want his position.
Yeah, that's also there. That's a cause of the problem. What's the problem? Independence, no, that comes along as well. Envy, yes.
No relationship.
No relationship, that's getting closer.
Ego.
Ego, no, that's also what you get when you don't have this. You get a false ego.
Desire to enjoy separate.
Desire to enjoy separate comes after as well. As a result of this.
Forgetfulness
is a cause. Desire to enjoy is a cause, is a result.
Ignorance
is a cause.
Envy.
Lack of love.
Lack of purity.
These are all true. But the seed, the thing that's really, really missing, if you go through all these things, if you purify your ego, you purify your envy. Just like, for example, someone was telling me recently about one Catholic order, and they're very, very strict. And she was describing, she went to a monastery, and she met the abbot in charge, and they have 7 times a day prayer. And everyone in the monastery attends every one of those prayers, no matter if they're the top person or the bottom person. And everyone has their own room. It's like monks have a cave, you could say. They have their own room, and no one else can go into their room. No one. Only them. And they do their prayers and meditation in their room. And they have to go on a schedule, and everyone, to the top person, to the bottom, does everything all the time. And she was explaining all these disciplines they followed, and the purpose of all these disciplines was to humble themselves, to bring themselves way down in the ego, so that then they could come closer to God. Doesn't that sound nice?
If there's taste.
Somebody is shaking their head, doesn't sound nice. What's wrong with it? They have that. They have that. They're very humble. But what's missing?
Service?
No, they do service. And they're very humble.
Spontaneity?
I don't know. I didn't meet them. So I can't say if they have spontaneity. But they.
Spontaneous love.
Spontaneous love is missing, yes. But why? No, that's you again in the center. That's me again in the center. I don't see what he's doing for me. I've still got myself in the center. He might not be doing anything for me. He might be doing something for him. I want to see what he's doing for me. I need to see what he's doing for me. It's me in the center still. And the only way you can step out of the center, and it's not immediate, you have to know him. You have to get to know him. If you don't get to know him, you can't love him. You won't change very much unless you get to know him. It's true. These monks, they want to know God, but until they're going in a different process. They're going in a process of humbling down, making themselves menial servants accepting a mood of humility, service, and so forth. And then the next step for them is, according to their understanding, they will need to know God. And God is the unknowable. But our process is very different than that. It's based on, I want to know him. And if I know him, he's like the sunlight. If I know him, my problems will go away by themselves. It's true. If I know him, my problems will be gone. And Prabhupada uses the example, if I'm standing with my back to the sun, I have an enormous shadow. One time, we have a park next door to where we live. And one morning I was walking in the park, and when the sun comes up, it's very low, just like you would see the same effect out here, and very natural, just like here. And there was a field, and I saw the sun coming up, and I had heard this analogy. So I turned my back, and I looked at my shadow, and it went way across the field. Woo! It went for meters and meters and meters of shadow because the sun was low and I was in the way, and the shadow went like that because I was in the way. And then as the sun went higher and higher and higher in the sky, my shadow also diminished. But when I turned to face the sun, my shadow was behind me. I didn't have a shadow in front of me anymore. It was me and the sun. And this is what we really need to have with Krishna. It's me and Krishna. Now, the mind will immediately say, what about Guru? What about my Guru? What about Lord Chaitanya? But this is a very, very shallow mind who says that. Because we know, even if we have a little understanding of Krishna, that everybody and everything is within the Absolute Truth. Everybody or everything is within Krishna. So as we serve Guru, he is trying to teach us to love Krishna. There's nothing else he's meant to do but teach us to love Krishna. And Krishna sends Guru as the teacher to come back to him. And he comes himself in the form of Lord Chaitanya. It is Krishna. And Guru is Krishna. Shakshad Hari Tvenasa Master Shastri. These are multi-potencies of Krishna. And Krishna is everywhere. And I see him nowhere. This is the problem. I see him nowhere. And wherever I go, I see I this, I that, I like this, I don't like that, I want that, I don't want that, yes, I like this, one of these, please. And we go on and on and on with ourselves in the center. And we can't change that unless we know Krishna. So when we chant, chanting in purity brings spiritual advancement. As part of our process to know Krishna, we give up certain activities. As part of our process to know Krishna, we accept certain activities. Then your bhakti will quickly grow. If you don't link everything to this task, my business and my life is to know Krishna, and he's traveled with me through every single birth I've ever taken. And if I don't have a knowledge of reincarnation or transmigration, then you can say he's traveling with me right now. He's right now, right there. Do I know it? Is he my friend? As Srila Prabhupada said yesterday, he is my friend and philosopher. Do anyone remember that? Krishna is my friend and philosopher. Is Krishna that intimate to us? Krishna was so vivid to Srila Prabhupada that he could suffer strokes and not lose any determination, not lose any effort. And even when he was down, he was with Krishna. And when he was up, he was with Krishna. And he had no taste for trying to enjoy something that belongs to Krishna. And here's our problem. We want to enjoy many things that belong to Krishna and label them as ours. Here's my house, my job, my family, my computer, my this, my that, my skills, my body, my mind, my intelligence, my life. And this is the problem. Why, even though we're chanting, we're not feeling the experience that Srila Prabhupada is describing. So when we come together and when we chant, it is meant to be like this. I really want to know you because I cannot transfer my bank account of all my attachment. I cannot transfer that bank account to the air. I cannot give up being in the center for some invisible person or for some distant kind of deity that I don't really know very well. I cannot give up being in the center of my life and controlling everyone, everything, for someone I don't totally trust. And this is what Krishna consciousness is simple and naturally all about, making that transfer. To make that transfer, I have to know you. It's essential to me. And when it becomes essential to you, like, for example, if you want to know something that's essential to you, just think, if somebody came up behind you right now and they put one hand over your mouth and one hand over your nose, what would you do? Would you go, thank you? Or would you go, oh, look, I'm just going to suffocate? Or would you start pushing them away? If someone threatens your life, you start to want to defend yourself. So then you can get a sense of, this is what it feels like when something's essential. I'll fight for it if it's essential for me. I'll do anything to get that. That's essential. This is, Prabhupada says, also spoke of the necessity of purification for spiritual advancement. And this is it right here. I have to know Krishna. If you get that focus, if you get like kind of like, it's like the penny drops. It's, you know, you use a money box, you put a penny in and suddenly it goes clang and it falls through the little hole and it lands on the and it reverberates on all the other coins. So when a conception, it just suddenly, it's as if a light goes on and you see, yes, that's what I need. If you get a moment like that, it's one of the most valuable moments in your life, because you start to reshape things automatically, not from without, because people are telling you you must do it, but because you understand it. Yes, I must. And do you change everything? No. But you change your targeting, and everything else changes accordingly. This is very interesting. Just like I heard one time on a lecture that Srila Prabhupada was giving, and I was in my art room upstairs doing some work, and the lecture was going on, so my attention wasn't there. And Prabhupada is speaking. And so I'm working, and all of a sudden he said, just like if someone comes to you and tells you, I have a very bad job, maybe somebody is working in a bar, and I'm trying to become Krishna conscious, what should I do? So that caught my attention a little bit. Yes, you know, I sort of know the answer to that. And so Srila Prabhupada said, then we don't tell them to give up their job. And I went, what? Because I was being immediate, tell them, give up that job. It's a terrible job. You shouldn't do that. You should give up your job. So when I heard Prabhupada say, we don't tell them to give up their job, I stopped and paid attention for a minute, even though I was only half listening. And he said, we tell them to continue with that work and give up the fruit. And then I stopped and I thought, well, what's the difference? But there's a vast difference, I think. If I tell them to give up the job, they get rid of the job, then they go and find another job. That's good. That's better. If I tell them to give up the fruit, give up the fruit, give the results of your work to Krishna. They're establishing themselves in relationship to Krishna. Not just purifying themselves. They're establishing themselves in relationship to Krishna. And this is very subtle. Very subtle. And then later, I thought, that's very profound. I need to find that. So I looked it up in folio and I was reading this and trying to understand it. And later I heard Srila Prabhupada say on another tape, he said, in another lecture, he said, we don't tell them to give up their work. We tell them to focus on Krishna. And then he said, and everything else will happen automatically. So it's not like you tell them, keep working in the bar. It's good to work in a bar. But you tell them, focus here, and the other changes will follow. And we are all examples of that. All of us are examples of that. Because at some time, we must have been doing something somewhat different, because look, we're all here in the material world. So we can't be saints. If we were saints, we would not be here in the material world at all. But as Prabhupada says here, the impure can become pure by following Krishna and by doing all works for Krishna. So what Srila Prabhupada had, has, and had not been seen by the world before, especially the Western world, in such an extraordinary manner, was he had such an intensely personal, developed, intimate relationship with Krishna. And when he came to America, he didn't come alone. And when he was preaching, he was not preaching alone. He didn't rely on his intellect or his good qualities. Do you know when we rely in our Krishna consciousness on a good quality or our intellect, it's a different category of bhakti. It's not swarup siddhi bhakti, which is pure devotional service. It's called sangha siddhi bhakti. That means I have the sangha of a siddhi mixed with my bhakti. I'm very intelligent, and I rely on my intelligence to do my bhakti. It's not pure devotional service. It's pure devotional service to hear about Krishna, to chant Krishna's name, to aspire to offer all one's work to Krishna. So if I have been given a gift, and I have some intelligence or some talent, when I think that this gift is not mine, it belongs to Krishna, let me offer that back to him. That's Swarup Siddhi Bhakti. It's very subtle. It's very subtle. A change has to take place within the heart of the devotee. And as that change is taking place within your heart, then your chanting becomes pure. Even though you're still impure. That doesn't sound right, but it's true. Because now I'm chanting for Krishna's pleasure, and I'm struggling with it because I'm such a nonsense person from so many lives, countless lives. So I can't become transformed overnight. How can I? But I'm trying now to please Krishna, and I sense that he's reciprocating with me. And how do I know? Because I'm making some improvement. Otherwise, where would my improvement come from? It's not going to come from me. I'm such a foolish rascal. But it's coming, so it must be coming from him. And then all the nice qualities that you all spoke about, the gratitude, and all the negative qualities that you spoke about, the envy and independence, they slowly, 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 they shift in the same way that in the morning it is dark, and then the sun rises and rises, and as the sun rises, the darkness is removed until the sun is at its highest peak. And then, when you look around, all the colors are very, very bright. Nam Aparat, that we chant, is compared to looking at the world. Now we're sort of like starting to come up. You see the sun. But you can't see all the colors. You might be used to this dullness. And you think this dullness is fullness, but it's dullness. Is that correct or not? Look out the window. Can you see the green, vibrant green of the gum leaves? Can you see the colors that you see at midday? Now you can't see them, but they're there. So also with us, within our heart, everything is there. But it's dull, and it has to come up. Our bhakti has to come up, 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 up. And when it comes to fullness, then Krishna becomes so delightful that just like those young gopi girls who could not do their housework without thinking constantly of Krishna and meditating and thinking, the clouds have come just over his head because it's so hot. And the grass on the ground is so pointy and his soft feet step on the grass. How painful that is for us. And they see in their hearts these things, and they don't have a problem with any of the things that we have a problem with. Because their vision and their knowledge, not intellectual knowledge, but their perception of Krishna is so full that they don't even have to think about giving up anything. And ours is so like the early morning darkness. It's coming. It's valuable, it's wonderful, and we're so fortunate. But we should know that it has to come to its zenith. And then we will become really deeply freed from everything that stands in the way of our consciousness of Krishna. I want to stop now and give us all another chance for some chanting. Janardhan, you can come and play. Can you play a nice contemplative time, so we can all meditate on these concepts a little bit and try to let something come in to touch us. And remember, this chanting is chanting for protection, like a child for the mother. If you've ever seen a child or had a child or watched a child when they're in difficulty, it will give you something to get a concept of the mood in which we best approach our chanting. And don't relax your efforts after a short time, please. I'm not going to remind you, but please make effort to chant, and the results will be yours.
Mahaprabhu and others, that's his shallow mind. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, because when we think of Krishna, because we're right now, we're self-centered, right? We all know this, we're self-centered. So when I think of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada mentions this, we compare him with us. We can't help it. We don't do it intentionally. But because our consciousness is on ourself as the center, so everything we see, we compare it, or we see how it can, what its relationship is, its relevance is to us. So we hear about Krishna and he's like this, so we think of ourselves and what I can and can't do, and Krishna, he's God, right? We're doing this on our own mental power. So he must be more, much more than me. But I'm the reference point at the present moment for a devotee, for anyone who's aspiring to understand God. In the beginning, as a neophyte devotee, we think like that. So therefore, that's compared to like a frog in a well looking at the Atlantic Ocean. So the frog is saying, well, the Atlantic Ocean is probably like a million times greater than me, my well. But God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is unlimitedly greater than we are. And the Absolute Truth incorporates everything. Everything. So within Krishna is Guru, within Krishna is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, within Krishna is everything. So when we think of God, this kind of crippled idea of God, he's bigger than me, he's quite nice even, but sometimes he could make a mistake, because I do. And sometimes he might not be able to protect me, because sometimes I haven't been able to protect myself. And sometimes we might not be able to trust him, because I'm not perfectly trustworthy. I try my best. I know he tries his best. Unlimitedly more, much more, but I'm just not quite sure. So when somebody says you surrender to Krishna, we see a reflection of our self there. And we enlarge as according to our ability. So when we hear about Krishna from somebody who knows him, somebody who's released from this ego prison, then we begin to get the conceptions are right. Now our conceptions are wrong. And according to our concept, our realization can follow. And so just like if somebody has a concept of God, that God is everything, or God is love, he's a character quality, he's everything, he's impersonal. When you talk of the word God, they think that. Right? So I'm talking about Krishna, and what's coming in their mind is a picture of some impersonal. So I say Krishna is very nice, and they think, yes, the everything is very nice. But if by the good fortune of association with a devotee, they begin to understand that God being everything isn't the complete understanding of God, and Srila Prabhupada would always use this word misconception. You have a misconception. Misconception of yourself, a misconception of everything. So if somehow by Krishna's mercy some of that fog clears and we have a clearer conception, then immediately we elevate. And if by Krishna's mercy we have a clearer conception, we elevate again. But if we hold on to our own understanding of God, then we think, well, how can I approach Krishna? I mean, my guru has to be there, this and this. And also, that's not incorrect. We're not saying that your guru shouldn't be there. We're not saying that. But we're saying that what is the function of the guru? What is the purpose of the guru? And if somebody says, my guru's function is not that, then we say your conception of guru isn't the highest conception of guru. You're not speaking about the same thing that we are. We're using the same words, but your understanding is different than ours. So Srila Prabhupada came to give Krishna in the form of his name. He said, touch Krishna, take Krishna. And he says, before you chant, just as sometimes I forgot this morning and didn't give Shivadananda opportunity, but first we chant the names of Namah Vishnu Padaya, and then we chant Sri Krishna Chaitanya. We're going through the mercy of our Guru. We're going through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but they're not different than Krishna. They're aspects of Krishna. When we see like that, there's a whole, holistic. Does that make sense? Any more questions? Yes. Yes.
And today we discussed that how we are working for Krishna. Yes. And even because you know, we are part of this movement, like our life pretty much that we, you know, we have to maintain our health to do our services and sadhana. And I've even heard elsewhere that a devotee should give time priority, first health, then family to do sadhana and then service. So anxieties related to these aspects then are they not spiritual anxieties?
How long have you been chanting?
15 years.
Do you think that? Do you actually think that health comes first before sadhana?
I don't, but like
somebody can say that. But do you think that? But you see, different people will tell you different things, and then you have to actually think. Is that doesn't maybe make sense? Because after I've taken care of my health and my family, I haven't got any time left for my sadhana. So it's not that we say the opposite, that you should only do your sadhana and you should neglect your health and your family. We don't say that either. What we say is that without the sadhana, because the sadhana is the process to get to know Krishna, it should be. So the sadhana brings the siddhi. And the other things, all the other things relating to our body, to our mind, and to all the paraphernalia that we have acquired in this lifetime, those things are called secondary devotional activities. The primary devotional activities are what make all those things devotional. If you don't do those primary activities, these things won't become devotional. We'll do them under the heading of mine, my health, my family, my this, my that, and they'll take up all our time. And they do, right, as a household, they do take up all our time. And we're left in a dynamic conflict between always how to get my sadhana in the front. So that's part of the responsibility of being a devotee, is to take up that challenge of how to put Krishna in the front. How to do these things more and more for his pleasure, not for my pleasure. It's not easy. If anyone tells me it's not easy, I'm the first to agree with them. But it's necessary, because that's how these secondary things, they came along as paraphernalia of this karmic birth. How they become devotional is by how much my love of Krishna is growing. Yes.
I think that's a statement that's going on in Pune, but in the background that many devotees have spoiled their health thinking that they should do more sadhana, more service.
So then what you have,
Prabhu has said then that look, that the view is sadhana, the goal is sadhana, but if you want to do not short time but long time service, you have to take care of your health, so otherwise it will break down.
So what that means is there's a balance always between the practical and the spiritual. And some people, rare people, go too far on the spiritual side. And so then you have to emphasize the practical side. But most people, 99%, all the karmis, they go way over on the practical side. And the sadhana is minimal. And so then you emphasize, look at this, look what you're doing over there. You've got all your weight on one side. You, this is nonsense, bring it over here. If somebody is very serious and they're the other way balanced, sometimes you have to say the opposite instruction. So we have to know which instruction is actually relevant for us. If my sadhana is very bad, I might feel very good when I hear that instruction. Oh, that's a very good instruction. But actually it won't bring me the right result, because that's the instruction meant in another context.
Okay.
So we need to hear like that. Why is somebody being instructed like that? What is the purpose?
The aim is also sadhana, but long-term sadhana.
Yes, exactly. So there must be, unless it's a very beginning devotee telling you that, there must be a plan in their mind when they're telling you that. They're trying to balance something. Yes, Prabhupada.
If someone says to you that the main reason I have a car is so that I can get a service and clean it, then you may want to give them some advice, but you won't tell them not to service their car and keep it clean. But you may tell them there's another reason for having it.
You mean that the car, the reason for having the car isn't to keep it clean? Is that true? But you won't tell them not to keep the car serviced and clean. Good example. Yes. They're spiritual to the degree that we are spiritual. They're not automatically spiritual. Mostly they're not. They're very self-centered. Mostly. At least I speak for myself. They're very self-centered. Oh, this and that and that and this and oh, I had a bad night's sleep and oh, and they just go on and on in the mind. And when I try and chant, they still go on and on in the mind. So no, this is a fallacy. It means a mistake that many devotees make. That since I've become a devotee, all the material things have already become spiritual. And then someone has to come and tell you, somebody who's a devotee has to tell you, I'm sorry, they're still material. They're still material, but you're spiritualizing them to the degree that your sadhana is focused. Without that, you go downhill. You're free to go downhill. Just because you've become a devotee, you're not forced to remain a devotee. How many devotees have you seen who have left? We're not stapled to the spiritual process. We can be unpinned again. So therefore, then when you realize that, maybe you feel a bit uncomfortable at first because it's easier to say, no, I'm just now, everything's okay. But we have to be discerning as we're going on our journey. When you drive a car, do you get in the car and say, okay, now I have my consciousness on the road, I can do anything? Do you say that? Why? Why? Why don't you do that? There's lots of things along the way. You have to stay on the road. You have to know which direction to go. You have to know whether to turn left or right. So automatic devotional service, you better ride on the bus. Any other questions? Yes. Can I ask you if I understood you correctly? Are you saying that for these 2 days, or when we go to the temple, we kind of forget our materialistic self a bit?
Yes.
And we feel something better?
Yes.
And the question is, how can we integrate that into our day-by-day life? What do you mean we forget ourselves?
That false ego, that part of thing that, you know, when Prabhu was singing, I don't think I was there. I was just in the moment, but, you know,
there's no, you know, whatever they call it, maybe desirelessness or whatever it was. It's not feeling and being, it was just...
You mean to say that when you were chanting, you didn't perceive the things that you normally feel?
Yes.
Okay, so that is sometimes mixed with some intoxication because we're still influenced by the modes. Sometimes we chant and it's not pure. But generally speaking, if you forget your materialistic self, materialistic meaning your mind, your body, and everything surrounding that, then that's a great gift of Krishna. He's given you a moment's experience of something different. And it's a very intelligent question to ask, so what do I do with that? How do I get that to go into my life? You know, when I leave here, and I would say even after breakfast we've forgotten. You notice, as soon as you put one morsel in your mouth, it's gone. Have you noticed that? And you don't care anymore. And you've turned into something else. So this is, unfortunately, it's going to continue like this for some time. But simultaneously, if you faithfully practice the process at the same time, you're developing another good fortune, another fortune. Just like if you live on the lower side of town, and you have not a very nice house and so many problems, but you're saving your money and you're trying to invest in a property in a very nice area. Still, these austerities of life will go on, but your mind is on this. I'm doing this. I'm living here, but I'm doing this. So the more that we have these experiences, these Krishna conscious experiences where we have this release suddenly from all the things that normally force us forward, the more we begin to feel like they're starting to form into another concept of myself. It's starting to clear, the fog is starting to clear, the sun is starting to shine. Look out here, the sun is rising a bit. So we have to be a little bit patient, because naturally, as we looked out here before, you can't see the greenery, it's all grey. So, but it's going to come if the sun keeps rising. So if we keep ourselves in connection with the sun, gradually, but definitely, it will come. Sometimes the problem in the beginning is we want it to come fast, because we're in pain. And we see so many bad things about ourselves that we maybe knew before or we didn't notice before. So we want it to be like a rapid overhaul. And then sometimes people leave Krishna consciousness and they find another process that promises them that. But it's not true. It's not going to be a rapid overhaul. Because we want to actually revive our original consciousness, our Krishna consciousness. And it's happening so rapidly, even now, that we can't imagine. But we have a little brain, a little mind, and we're impatient. If an ant comes walking out from behind Janardhan's harmonium, and he walks across here, and he manages to cross over all the fibers of the carpet, which is a big thing, and he goes around this massive mountain here, with the red lights on it at the top. He goes around here, he goes past here, he goes right through all these people. He sees these huge things that he's walking right by. And if you told him, you know, you're in a room full of human beings. What? All he knows is the fibrous carpet. So I try and comfort myself by saying, I'm a bit like that little ant. And so I'm getting a bit antsy, a bit impatient. Hurry up, you know what's happening. But it's all right. Krishna's there, Krishna's taking care. He's telling me how to proceed back to that. Back to that, that's my discipline. Because I want to go to him. So if you have that, practically speaking, you're very fortunate. But your good fortune is only beginning to dawn. That's an accurate balance. You're greatly fortunate, but it's in the beginning stages. So don't be impatient and don't be proud that I have such good fortune. But take it, treat it like very valuable. It's very valuable. And do the best you can with it, and Krishna will see that. Thank you. I think our time is running. In case you have